Ni sambula vinaka, you're listening to Deadline from RNZ Pacific. I'm Koroi Hawkins. Coming up,
we've premised this campaign on the rule of law and how we're seeing it being eroded.
Fama Matafa says Samoa diaspora is key for the FAST party's rise.
The government has relaxed registration requirements. They have relaxed target groups even.
Fiji ramps up its mass COVID-19 vaccination. And we found out why Tongans are calling for a ban on whale hunting to be lifted. Fiame Naomi Matafa, who may become the next Prime Minister of Samoa, says the support of the country's diaspora for her FAST party was critical. Fiame's party has tentatively won 25 seats in the new parliament, the same as the caretaker Human Rights Protection Party, with one seat held by an independent. Don Wiseman spoke with Fiame about her party's meteoric rise, beginning by asking her when she expected results to be finalised.
We anticipate that if it's not completed this week, it should be completed early next week. So, I mean, it's really just to await the outcome, whether there are any changes or not. And until we have that official result, then we'll know where things are, how things will progress.
Yes, I mean, have you got any idea at this point how things might go?
No. Well, I mean, you know, we either remain with the results we have now, or there might be some slight changes, but we don't know, and the results don't really indicate that there might be any major changes.
You've had a very turbulent year in politics in Samoa, haven't you? You particularly.
Yes.
This must feel quite wonderful.
Well, I think, you know, for a party that was only established last July, I think what we've been able to achieve is quite phenomenal. And I must credit the team and the immense support that we've received, not only locally, but the Samoan diaspora. I mean, it's quite a phenomena. You know, would like to have a bit of time to see how that happened and why it was happening.
What were the things, though, that drove it? We know that there were these controversial constitutional moves by the government, but why are a lot of people turning away from HRPP?
Well, I think with the three bills, I mean, it's demonstrated perhaps that there's now a building lack of trust in the constituency in terms of how well they are protected or how well their interests are being protected, especially with these three bills. You'll understand, of course, that the whole issue of land and titles here in Samoa is very central to Samoans and how they live their lives. I mean, there is a real concern, especially in the last term, with the numbers that the HRPP was able to hold, and the power that arose from that for, you know, the government really to do what it wanted and to perhaps pursue what would be seen as vested interests of particular individuals or particular sectors, as opposed to, you know, the role of government that it looks after the country as a whole. I think, you know, with the Samoan diaspora, these three bills come on top of what has been, you know, a building concern that's been articulated, especially through groups from overseas, about land issues, customary land issues, and how people are feeling that perhaps the protections of customary land is being eroded through, you know, various vested interests and so forth. So I think that has been building. I mean, there was an issue in the last election, but I think in this election, with the three bills, it's, that concern has heightened, and then coupled with, you know, other laws that are demonstrating to people that, you know, the government is really using the power that it has to construct laws to serve particular purposes or the vested interests of particular sectors. Then that people feeling unhappy, it's really beginning then to build. And I think a large part of that has played a part in the groundswell for the support of the FAST. And, you know, we've premise this campaign on the rule of law and how we're seeing it being eroded, and what, you know, the implications of moving away from the rule of law can do, not only to, you know, democratic practice, but, you know, the protections that people enjoy from that, you know, starting from basic human rights right through to, you know, land issues, and even, you know, the changes of laws to the Electoral Act, you know, which you will understand is very current, and some of the laws that have been changed, which are blatantly to, you know, support, you know, the current government and its membership. So I think all those things have been building up.
Yes, one of the concerns that the diaspora have is that they don't have a say. So would you be looking at an overseas seat for them?
Oh, yes. I think we've committed to that in our manifesto. And, you know, the remittances that Samoans from overseas send through to us balances our foreign exchange dealings and so forth. So, you know, that's not a small contribution to the economy of Samoa.
All right. If you become Prime Minister, what is going to be your first action, your first significant action?
Well, you know, this is government. And one of the first things we'd like to do is organise internally our team that will step up and take, you know, the government through being established. I think one of the first things we have to look at is that the re-establishment of the autonomy of the public service. These are the people that carry out the work of government. And, you know, you can't have a government if you don't have a public service that is functioning as it should. And the public service has been highly politicized. So, you know, we really do need to bring the service back to a situation where they are the professional public servants, that, you know, they can continue the work of government through, you know, different political leaderships. But that has been, I think, a big problem that we're identifying in order to carry our work forward, you know, is to really organize, I suppose, our in-house and able to carry out the work of what the party has established through its manifesto and what they would like to do.
All right. So it may be next week before the final results are available. So it's going to be a tense few days for you.
Well, you know, Don, I don't know what tenseness does for anyone, but, you know, there are things that are out of your control. So the best thing is the process go through. I mean, we have, you know, different options available to us, but until that result is confirmed, you know, it's the best thing to do is to prepare what you can prepare and leave the process to happen.
That was the leader of the Samoa Fast Party, Fiame Naomi Mataafa. RNZ Pacific has reached out to Toilaipa Sailele Malialinga Oi, the leader of the caretaker HRPP party, for comment, but his staff has said he will only comment after the official election results are out. People are turning out in large numbers in Fiji to get vaccinated against COVID-19 as the government steps up its campaign against the infection. Fiji is offering the AstraZeneca vaccine to its citizens. Our correspondent, Lide Movono, went down to one of the large vaccination centres in Suva and joins me now. Bula, Lide, so how are things going there?
Well, I've just come back from the Vodafone Arena, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, function venues in the country, located at Lozala Bay in the capital city, Suva.
And what's the setup there? What are they doing?
Well, you know, what's happening right now, Karu, is that it looks like the government is going all out in a mad rush to vaccinate as many people as possible, because they do have to finish the stocks that they have that have come from the COVAX facility. So there are hundreds and thousands of people even going to, as I understand it, all the 19 vaccination sites around the country like this one.
And are there any figures in terms of the coverage so far and what they're aiming for?
I don't have the figures offhand right now, but I will be talking with the Minister for Health about how they're doing in terms of their targets and their goals achieved so far. But what we do know is that the government has relaxed registration requirements. They have relaxed target groups even, and they're trying. They're in a mad rush is what it seems like to me. When they first announced registration and they had been focused on the frontliners, and when they announced it to the rest of the public, we were instructed to register on the government's digital registration site for citizens. But now anyone can turn up as long as they have any kind of identification. So it looks like they're in a big race.
And you've been talking to people, or what are people saying about getting vaccinated?
You know, it looks like a 50-50 situation here, but I suspect that the government's public relations and marketing efforts to just kind of allay the fears around vaccination might have improved the odds a little bit. But most of the people that we're talking to on the ground are split between, yes, I will get vaccinated, I am aware of the risk, but the advantages outweigh it. I am eager to get back to work. And as you know, we're completely dependent on our tourism industry. And so a lot of the people who says, yes, they will get vaccinated, are people who are directly affected or who have to travel, Kuroi. And the other half of the population are people who, in my opinion, aren't too aware of what the benefits will be to getting as enough of the population as possible vaccinated.
So the vaccine on offer is AstraZeneca in Fiji, and we know there have been some safety concerns over this vaccine, especially for younger people. Are people in Fiji aware of those particular concerns, and are they worried at all?
The thing is, people were worried even before information came out towards the end of last week as to the possible side effects for blood clotting in the AstraZeneca vaccine. So people were frightened to begin with, but when the vaccination, when the information about side effects came out, the government put a disclaimer to it and informed the public that they are aware of the vaccination, but that the percentage of risks outweighs the advantages to a country like ours. So I have not heard fear. I've just heard a lot of people saying they don't think they need the vaccine, which is surprising for a country like ours with a very, very high vaccination coverage. As you know, we have a vaccination program that is probably one of the best in the region insofar as infectious diseases go. So there's not too much fear. People are aware of the risk. But public health programs in the country is such that people understand there is a risk with every medication they take, Kuroi.
And you're not getting the jab, are you, while you're down there?
I am, actually. I am considering getting the jab. I am hoping that people with some influence in the community, like journalists, all do go and get the jab and talk about what the benefits or what the effects and the impacts have been to them, if there are any. I think that the more people that are talking about it who have some influence, it might be better for the entire country.
That was our Fiji correspondent, Lide Movono, in Suva. Earlier this month, a whale washed ashore in Tonga's northern island group of Haapai, and it's resurrected calls for an end to Tonga's ban on hunting whales. This came amid unconfirmed reports that locals had cut up the mammal to make use of its meat. Tonga is one of the main breeding grounds for humpbacks during the Antarctic winter months, and in the past generation, following a whale hunting ban in the 1970s, whale watching has become a big business. But it wasn't always like this for Tonga, and there are calls for return to whale hunting for food. Don Wiseman spoke with our Tonga correspondent, Kalafi Moala, who began by saying whales washing up on the shore are not out of the ordinary in Tonga.
That's not really unusual. We call them here a beached whale. In other words, now and then there'd be one that get washed up.
People tucked into it with gusto, it would seem.
Yes, I think these are people who remember the old days when whaling, of course, was a legitimate way of fishing in Tonga and providing food. As a youngster here in Tonga, there was whaling was a full-on business, and it was seasonal as well. And Tonga was fed whale meat for that particular season. And then, of course, it came to the time when it was then banned from killing whales, and we were told that not only one to save the species and preserve the species, but also that we would get more money from watching the whales, or at least getting the tourists to watch the whales, than from killing them.
Bit of a problem at the moment, of course.
Yes.
No one to watch the whales. So there's been quite a lot of talk subsequently about the need to relook at this law on the whale ban.
Yes, and I tell you, one of the first time that this became an issue was when in the 1980s there was a concern from the fact that Tongans were consuming a lot of fatty foods, especially mutton flaps that was being imported from New Zealand. So there was like a call to not only reduce the consumption of fatty foods that are imported, but then there were those that says, well, we need to go back and relook at the situation with our whales, because whales are pretty good healthy meat to eat, at least for Tongans, compared with mutton flaps. And so in the 80s, there was a starting of the talk like that. And now with the COVID-19 and shutting down of the border and no tourism coming into Tonga, whale watching was a very lucrative business here in Tonga. But then now with no tourists, I think people are starting to talk again. Maybe we need to consider lifting the ban and going back to whaling and eating the whale meat.
I would have thought, don't have any idea about this, but I would have thought that whale meat was pretty oily and pretty high in calories.
Actually, it's what they call the whale blubber, which is the fatty part of the whales that it produces oil and even fuel in some places, including Tonga, where they burn lambs with whale oil. But Tongans, as much as I can understand as I was growing up, never eat the whale blubber or the fatty part of the whale. There's a very, very strong, meaty content in the whale, and it's supposed to be full of protein. It's supposed to be really good meat, at least in comparison with meat that we import like mutton flap.
So what sort of support do you think they would have within the government and around the country generally about lifting this ban?
I don't think, Don, it's going to get any support, not only at present, but even in the future, because tourism has been declared as the top earner, foreign exchange earner for Tonga. And even though there is the border ban from traveling right now, it's still considered as being temporary, and when the future swings by again and we allow tourism in, that whale watching is going to be one of the biggest attractions for Tonga. The other issue too is that I think our government and our leaders are very much in the mood, like everyone else around the world, concerning the protection and preservation of the species, particularly species like whales, where I think if we continue to fish and whale, we could actually reduce substantially the whale population, at least in our waters. So I don't think, among our leaders anyway, there is any thinking that, yeah, maybe we should lift the ban. I think there is a strong commitment in Tonga, and there's pressure from the development partners overseas as well to not go back to the lifting of the ban. That whale watching is the way to go, not whale eating.
That was our Tonga correspondent, Kalafi Mwala. And that's Dateline for today. Remember, you can download this program free to your mobile device on any podcast platform. And if you're listening on Apple, please leave us a rating so others can find us. Ka kite anō.